remember I said about a 23% of firms are considered high growth.
Makes sense.
The median growth rate of the high growth firms is 56.4%.
Wow.
Yeah. Welcome to the Cloud Accounting Podcast. I'm Blake Oliver.
And I'm David Leary.
So David, you are back from Mexico. You did Thanksgiving in Mexico. How was that?
Thanksgiving in Mexico is the best because you're sitting on the beach. You even get real turkey dinner. Like you get gringo Thanksgiving, which is nice. You just check out. It's the way to go. The accounting news that was nice because I had time. I got caught up on all my news. I have no more articles in my backlog.
Yeah, you have like 12 things that we've got to talk about. So we better jump into this if we're going to get through it all.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this will be a test because I think we've gotten some feedback through social media. Some people say, hey, you guys should do more articles. Some people are like, no, keep it tight at 20 minutes. Right now it's 50-50. I think I'm going to put out a real deal survey this week so we get a better quantitative number here on Twitter. But as of right now, we have a lot to go through. So let's jump in.
Let's do it. So we're going to compromise. We're just going to pack an hour of stuff into 20 minutes. Go.
Yes, today we are for sure. I think big news last week was Intuit released their earnings.
Mm-hmm.
The big highlights from that were, I think that we care about or we'd like to watch are the QBO online subscribers growth. So they're now at 3.6 million subscribers, Intuit is. It grew by another 41%, if you can believe that. I feel like it's been growing at 41% every quarter now for maybe 3 years. And I think cloud accounting in general, I think Xero has been growing at the same clip as well. Like cloud accounting itself is growing at 40% a year, I think it's safe to say. So anyways, they're up at 3.6 million subscribers, but they also talked about their US numbers as well. So US subscribers is at 2.7 million. And international subscribers grew at 61% and is now approaching 880,000.
Wow.
And I thought it was interesting because I think I've sent you the picture in your chat, but they have all the US numbers. And it's interesting to kind of look at those versus Xero's numbers. So we talked about Xero's last podcast because Xero had that mid-year report out.
Yeah.
So if you look side by side, so Xero had, they hit 1.6 million worldwide. And so their North America were reported as 178,000. And Intuit's was, I just lost it.
Well, it's 2.7 million US subscribers. Internationally, QuickBooks is at 880,000.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting the way both report it because Xero just says rest of the world, but Intuit has their numbers broken out by some deeper regions like France and India. But I thought the interesting number was in the UK. Xero and QuickBooks are pretty much equal. I think Xero reported 350,000 in the UK. QBO is now at 305,000. So it's almost 50% equal number of subscribers in the UK.
Wow.
But Australia, definitely Australia, New Zealand, for sure. Xero is still winning that market. And in the North America, QBO by far is destroying Xero on that market. Mm-hmm. But rest of the world's pretty equal. Outside of those two, they're two original markets, if you want to call it, think of it that way.
Yeah.
They're dominating their original markets, but then outside of that, it's 50-50.
So there were a couple of articles that came out that were written as a follow-up to QuickBooks Connect that are a great tie-in to this, which is Matt Paff wrote an article. He always writes the article that nobody else will write.
Yep. It's always a good one.
Sholto McPherson also had a great summary. They had some great takeaways that to be honest, we kind of missed, especially when it comes to where Intuit is headed in terms of new products or what their direction is, right?
One thing I totally missed or we missed is QuickBooks is online is kind of the legacy brand. It used to be you'd have Intuit QuickBooks and the word online in the logo. Now it's just QuickBooks. It's just Intuit QuickBooks and that's QuickBooks Online, right?
Right.
And desktop gets the lower billing. Intuit QuickBooks has a sub-brand desktop now.
So they've changed the logo. So they've changed the logos now. Now just plain old QuickBooks, that means online. QuickBooks desktop means that's now the legacy product.
Exactly, right? And so there's this handoff. And in a lot of Matt's article is all about legacy and handoff, which we've talked about a little bit before. The other parts we talked about with Brad Smith and Sasan. But ultimately, the ones things we missed is we missed the logo. That was really interesting. And then the other big one
They didn't make a big deal about that, right? Like Intuit just sort of like did it.
Yeah, exactly. But Matt picked up on it, yeah, thinking about legacy. And we talked about these things real time that day. Matt took, I don't know, 2 weeks to write his article here. So he had a lot more time to digest a little bit.
That's our excuse.
But one thing I think Matt starts to lay the theory of, and then we can talk about it a little bit more in the next article, is so Matt kind of makes the theory of QBO could just be a loss leader on Intuit's journey to become a bank.
Right, with all of the announcements about QuickBooks Capital and some other same day payroll, same day invoice factoring. What are they calling that? I forget the name. They're not calling it factoring.
Same day payments.
Same day payments, where they take 1%. And Intuit has kind of always done this, that the QuickBooks subscription or license fee is really cheap, really affordable, and they make their money on add-ons, which in the desktop world was primarily payroll and merchant services, right? You might pay a few hundred dollars for QuickBooks, but you could pay thousands of dollars for payroll and merchant services as a small business. And now that is expanding in the online world into loans.
Yeah, and I think it follows along the logic I've always argued about. Whoever owns the customers is going to win. The heart and the mind share. And the best example I could give is American Express and Costco. American Express used to be the official credit card for Costco. They thought customers loved American Express. The contract was up. Costco and American Express played hardball with each other. Costco bet that people love Costco. And millions of people, including myself, stopped using an Amex card and switched to the Visa card because now that's the official card of Costco. And so it's kind of that same thing, I think, with Intuit's play here is, hey, the customers love QuickBooks and they love Intuit more than they love the banks.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to, you know, market to them. And this is Shloto's point when we go to the next article. It's very easy to market to them and just get them to be loyal to your other product offerings.
Right. And when it comes to lending, that is a traditionally terrible, inefficient process that requires business owners putting together all sorts of reports, exporting information from their accounting system, which may not, you know, they may not even have. And it's not good. It's not a good experience. And a lot of business owners get denied, but Intuit has access to all of this really, really valuable general ledger information, sales information that they can use to make loans automatically, right? They can automate that entire process, say, and pre-qualify their customers for lines of credit and whatnot.
And so then flipping over to Shloto's article, he really kind of takes a thought that Matt had in his article and really lays out a case with real numbers and real calculations. Talks about, you know, different parts of the funnel, the pain awareness, and then Intuit is the ability to put promotions right in front of people. Then the middle of the funnel, like we can look at their Intuit, can look at the data, right? And then market based on the data in the file. And then already have them pre-approved at the bottom of the funnel. When they're ready, when somebody's actually finally ready to make a purchase decision, the answer is already there. Intuit knows the answer before the customer asks, right? And he really ties this back to, guess who's a $1 trillion company that does this really well? Amazon. And with one-click ordering. And to some extent, like all these financial services could turn into one click because of Intuit. And I think he makes a really good argument in this article, and everybody should read it. Both these articles actually are really, really good.
All right. We'll post those in the show notes. Thank you, Matt and Shloto.
Yeah. So before we jump to something else, though, one thing that was Intuit's earnings, which I just thought was staggering to look at, has nothing to do with cloud accounting, but it's really the TurboTax space and just the U.S. tax industry landscape. So this is like the last decade of the tax industry. So there's 143 people that had to file tax returns 10 years ago. Now there's about 152 million. So it's grown by 10 million, the number of taxpayers, right? The interesting thing, if you look at these numbers, TurboTax used to only do 22 million of the tax returns in the country. And now TurboTax is doing 41 million. The manual taxpayers was at 15% or 15 million. And now it's down to 4 million. About every 2 years, it drops by another million. So manual in 6 years is going to be gone. There will be nobody doing manual tax returns. But the really interesting number that if you look at the tax stores, their market share is just shrinking astronomically as people that do it themselves, either through TurboTax or other DIY software, they're just crushing the tax stores. Even the CPAs are still growing because the number of all tax returns is going up. So the CPA firms and professionals are growing, but the tax stores are getting slaughtered. Like they may not make it across the board.
God, wow. TurboTax has grown so fast from 22 million to 41 million over 10 years from 2008 to 2018.
And the interesting thing will be is where does this, as 6 years from now, when manual stops, right? And then based on the decline for stores, like what happens when TurboTax takes away all what's left of the tax stores? Will it ever start dipping into the CPA and the professionals? Or will there some balance finally form here?
Well,
but for the last 10 years, it's been a machine.
I mean, the more sophisticated the TurboTax can become, the more at risk the professional shops are, that the CPA, the accounting firms are. And great examples of that are the individual returns that go along with the business returns. But I think that CPAs are protected because, you know, a business owner isn't that price sensitive when it comes to their tax work. They're more interested in quality. And so are they going to take that individual return and go fill out their own TurboTax? I doubt it. You know, not likely to happen.
And I think I remember Brad Smith saying this years ago that, like, because there's always business talk about, you know, the 1 minute tax return or tax form reinvention. And you know, there's always been talk about this, right? About simplifying the tax process, et cetera, et cetera. And like he was always saying, like, chances are if it ever truly got too simple, everybody would do it themselves. Like it's kind of the opposite, right? Everybody would use TurboTax to do it themselves, right? If it was super simple, because then nobody would justify spending, you know, 69 million people that go to a CPA or a professional would not do that anymore if it got simple. So it's kind of like the opposite theory of like, oh, Intuit wants it complicated, but really Intuit would want it simplified because they would steal another 69 million returns from that part of the market. So enough about Intuit. Let's talk about important things like employees. I think we have a couple employee articles here.
Yeah, let's see what you got here.
An interesting one about tech. 38% of employees do not want management dictating the tech they use for work. I know I have been on that kick myself. I hate using any tech IT wants. I've always thought my laptop, or like, I grew up doing construction and my dad, you'd bring your own saw and your own hammer to the job site, right? Nobody told you to use this hammer. And it's kind of that same thing. And I think you're on that page, right? You want to use your own tech, correct?
One of the really attractive things about going to work for Flowcast was that they said I could use whatever I wanted. I could use a Mac, I could use PC, I could install my own apps. Such a magnificent change after being forced into one platform in my last accounting gig.
It's interesting that affected you getting hired there, because the article talks about that.
I probably would have been okay. Like, I don't think I would have turned down the job, but I also think that if we didn't have that policy in our team, that we would have trouble attracting people. And overall, I think it just represents a different approach to employees, you know, not dictating what tools they're going to use. I mean, we'd be a different company if we didn't have that philosophy. It's not just about the tech, the specific computer I use, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think this is the best in here. The key is for business looking to keep their workforce happy and productive. And if you do that, you're going to have to give up some IT control and let people have some freedom with that. I think there's a couple of interesting takeaways. I saw this happen at Intuit back in the day. Intuit was only IBM PCs, Lenovo. And then people, when Apple iPhone came out and people really started having that brand loyalty to Apple, right? And people would just start, they'd bypass IT and start getting MacBook Pros. And then eventually now MacBook Pro is the official computer of Intuit, I think, if I remember correctly. So it's kind of funny how the employees drove the tech adoption. And this is, and Dave Barrett has a great blog post about this from, Dave Barrett is the CEO of Expensify. And I think for the last 8 years, that's been Expensify's business model. Is just get the employees, right? And I think I've even heard stories of T-sheets where employees will go to a new company and they'll demand T-sheets because they used it at a different company.
So right? This, just to give everyone a little context, the stat is that 38% of employees don't want management dictating the tech they use for work. They want to choose it for themselves. And it's from a report by NextPlane called The Fight to Collaborate, A Growing Rift Between IT and Teams. I agree. Expensify's entire business model, for at least for the early years, was built on this grassroots type of IT approach, where one person or a small group of people in a corporation would hate the way they were doing expense reports. Maybe they were forced to use some legacy system. Maybe there wasn't even a system and they had to create an Excel sheet and tape receipts and fax them in, that sort of thing. And Expensify said, okay, well, you don't have to get IT approval to use our software. You can just start using it for free. And you can make a beautiful expense report that you can then email to your accountants at your company. And so what happens is that enough people start doing this that the accountants are like, oh shit, this is amazing. We should do this. And then accounting and IT all get on board and they buy it. So it's totally from the bottom up type of approach. And
I think I saw it even with some sharing utilities like Dropbox.
Yeah, Dropbox is a great example.
I wouldn't be surprised if some of our booking and accounting firms are going to start seeing this where their employees are like, I only want to use the cloud software because the bank feeds are better. I don't want to use some desktop app that you have our clients on. I know this for a fact has happened with an accounting firm where they have a mix of desktop, Cooper's desktop customers, a mix of clients that are on Cooper's Online. And they discovered the employees were all the bookkeepers in the firm were kind of neglecting the desktop customers because they hated working in it. So this is already happening from the accounting standpoint as well. So obviously, if you let people pick technology, you can retain your employees, right? You don't have that hammer over their head. Another interesting thing that's kind of bubbled up is paying your employees the same day. So I have two links we'll get in there. One is there's a podcast from NPR's Daily Indicator, and it kind of gives a history of payday, why paydays used to be when people were harvesting oil from whales. They used to be you got paid every 2 years when you returned with the boat to people were getting paid for a while every Saturday. And it's kind of as taxes came in, it kind of went to like a biweekly payroll, super, super popular, right? And so there's an NPR podcast for everybody to listen to, which is really good. And then recently just announced ADP. Well, QuickBooks talked about it's coming, right? Same day payroll, but apparently ADP has released it. And one of the customers was talking about that I think employees wise, one thing that the noted 70% of the people surveyed want shorter pay cycles. So the vast majority of employees want to be paid much sooner than every 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, 2 weeks is a long time. And usually by the time you get that direct deposit, it's even longer. So, you know, you've got the 2 weeks are up. And then you have to wait like another week for your actual pay.
And this hotel company, so they have some hotels and some museums or something, but they're reporting that since they've switched to daily payments, they are able to recruit employees easier and have higher retention rates. We could be getting to a point where at the end of every day, you'll have that direct deposit in your bank account. It's definitely going to be here. So there's just two quick ones worth people checking out. I think you had a survey about high-performing firms, right?
Yeah. So I came across this really interesting survey by Hinge Marketing. It's a 2018 survey. So this year, it's called the 2018 High Growth Study. Hinge is a marketing agency, a small marketing agency that serves just professional service firms. And they did a really nice job with this report. So check it out. I'll put the link in the notes as always. Some items that are just really interesting to call out. Oh, and by the way, over 1,000 firms participated in this study, accounting firms and consulting firms, with $176 billion in combined revenues and over 1 million full-time employees. And they together have over $20 billion in marketing budgets. So not a small survey. What was really interesting to me was the growth rates. So if you compare accounting and finance to other professional services areas like tech, consulting, architecture, legal, accounting has the lowest growth rate of all at 6.1%. That's the median growth rate for 2017, 6.1%. Even legal is growing faster than accounting at 8.3%. And then tech is at 11.4%, of course, right? Good time to be a professional services person in tech. So accounting is not growing all that fast compared to other professional services. Not shoddy, but not fast. But what's interesting is if you break that down into different firms and you look at, well, inside of accounting and finance as an overall industry, who's growing? About 23% of firms are considered high growth, meaning that they're experiencing over 20% growth annually. Like that's really, really fast, right? A little less than a quarter of firms are high growth. 60% of firms are average growth, right? Which means they're growing less than 20%, but they're still growing. And then about 17% of firms are not growing at all. So they're either not growing or they're shrinking.
So if the market's not expanding very fast, if firms are growing at 20% plus a year, they're stealing clients from other people. I mean, stealing's not the right way, but I kind of use that same when I was talking about the TurboTax numbers before, right? They're eating the lunch of the other people, and they're just taking the and I guess the A and B clients as well.
Yeah. So, well, here's what's interesting, actually, that you would think that, but the data doesn't support that. I think what's happening is that the vast majority of firms are growing very slowly or not at all, like 3/4 of firms, or shrinking. And that 1/4 of firms that is growing is taking all the new customers.
Okay.
Remember, I said about 23% of firms are considered high growth.
Makes sense.
The median growth rate of the high growth firms is 56.4%.
Wow.
Yeah. So high growth firms, right? The minority of firms that are growing fast are growing at an average of 56.4% annually, which totally makes sense to me. I was part of that in my own small firm, just being in the right place at the right time with Xero, with cloud accounting. I mean, it's hard not to grow when you're the only, the second bookkeeper in the country that's using Xero, right? That was my particular situation. So I got lucky. And there's tons of other firms that have, caught on to this that are now doing this, right? Since QuickBooks Online got good, since Xero got good, since Sage Intacct, became a viable option, since NetSuite really started taking off. And though I think the firms that are using cloud, right, and of course all of the add-ons, Expensify.com, T-Sheets goes on and on and on, right? They're the ones who are just eating up all the new customers.
So I think this covers a lot of marketing type stuff. Does it talk about whether or not these high growth firms, what technology stacks are using? Because I think I've seen a survey before, a year and a half, 2 years ago, about firms that are 100% cloud were growing at 14%, and firms that were had a mix of cloud and desktop were growing at about 4-6%, and firms that only have desktop clients only were losing clients.
Yeah. So this is just an executive summary. The actual report's like $500, and I just don't feel like spending that kind of money. So if you're a listener and you want to donate to the Cloud Accounting Podcast so we can get the full report.
Is it Hinge Marketing?
Hinge Marketing, yeah. If Hinge Marketing would like to share the report with us, we can dig into that.
That would be great to get some more of that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't have that information for you, but I can tell you that my suspicion is yes, it's got to be that way, right? The high growth firms are the ones that are.
I agree.
And you can see this in the fact that average growth firms, so that 60% of firms that are just growing average, they're only growing 7%. And the no growth firms are shrinking on average by like almost 2% every year.
Yeah, because going cloud, automating some of your workflows and processes by using other cloud apps, you can just take out more clients. I mean, it's simple math.
Yeah, and you can stay on desktop, right? But you are not going to grow. But I think a lot of partners and firms where they are desktop based and they are not moving to cloud are really they just want to pull in checks until they retire, and they're not interested in modernizing.
Well, everybody listening to us is a high growth firm, so I think we're.
If you're not, yeah, exactly. So we can dish out on them, on the no growth firms all day long, and nobody will get mad at us. One more chart from this report, and then I'll shut up. Of the high growth firms, or if you compare high growth and no growth firms, actually, they don't talk about the particular technology being used, but they do say that the high growth firms, 43% of them, actually rather 34% of them are offering specialized services, whereas only 24% of the no growth firms are. And high growth firms are more likely to be industry specialists. They're more likely to be able to serve a specific role or organizational function, solve specific problems.
They're solving niche things. Yeah.
And interestingly, the high growth firms are actually less likely to be using specific technology, which means to me that they're more likely to use a variety of tools.
Which full circle goes right back to the article of keep your employees happy by, utilizing whatever technology your employees want to use. Maybe these high growth firms are actually really, they're technically able to use whatever technology their clients bring to the table.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Yeah, they're willing to experiment and make mistakes. And this is why when people ask me about the cost of moving to cloud and how disruptive it is, I say, yeah, it's painful. It's expensive. You're going to lose people. But the upside is so humongous. And this right here, I'm staring at this chart. I'm going to paste it in the show notes. Like, this is the reason why it's worth that risk, that 56% growth on average, which means that, you know, like, I mean, I'm sure there's firms that are out there doubling every year. It's got to be.
This is pretty staggering. This is a great find, actually. It's dumbfounding, these numbers that are in this. We're coming up to a half hour, so I don't know if we should go past this per se. I'll just go rapidly through. There's two more articles quickly. There's an article from Bloomberg Tax, Blockchain's Promise to Revolutionizing. Let's rewind the title here. Blockchain Promise to Revolutionize Accounting Hits the Reality Wall. Some of the article is basically this. Blockchain's not going to change a lot of our workflows in our space for a decade. You can read the article, but that's the gist of it. A year ago, everybody was like, this is going to change everything in 6 months. As people are really starting to have serious conversations about blockchain in the accounting industry, people are starting to come to the consensus that this is way far off. So we might never have to talk about blockchain again for a decade.
Well, and I'm so glad that this is finally, people are realizing that blockchain is not going to, it's just, I've been saying this. I don't understand. How is blockchain going to change audit? Tell me, in the next 5 years, what are people suddenly going to start using it? And we're not going to be using banks anymore? Like, no, it's not going to happen. It's going to take a long time. It's going to make the audit more complex, actually. The auditors I talk to say, no, blockchain makes the audit more difficult because now you have to audit the actual technology too.
Yeah, and some of the arguments is that companies are not likely to share their general ledger with another company.
Yeah, like, it's not going to be public information. So, like, how do you? Yeah.
So, I think it's worth reading. It's actually a really good article, and it brings some sanity to this that we've been having. And then I would like you to say
if you're at a conference and somebody gets up there and starts talking about how blockchain is going to automate the audit, just walk out. Just stop listening to them immediately because they have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, even Sean Stein, who we had
him on the podcast, and
there's a quote from him in this article, which we can use this as our quote, right? I am fully confident that 10 years from now, blockchain is not going to be some new radical idea. It's going to be part of how business is conducted. And so it's good that even he, who is crazy in love with Bitcoin and blockchain, has a 10-year perspective on this.
Meanwhile, Bitcoin hit a new low today. Let's see, Bitcoin, what's the current price of Bitcoin? It is now at $3,640 to the Bitcoin, down from a 20,000 high, something like that, earlier this year.
Yeah, I wrote my January predictions and Bitcoin was in one of those, the Bitcoin collapse. So I'm feeling really good now that I'm going to make it out to the end of the year with a huge, because my prediction was people are going to lose their ass, and they did.
Yeah.
Bad, 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 bad. So the other thing is there was some multi-factor stuff news that we could just put the links in. I won't discuss much, but a lot of people do multi-factor authentication when they sign the websites and they get a text back. Apparently there's some security issues, some leaks in that. So maybe that makes you kind of second guess, like, are you doing the right thing security wise? And then Microsoft had a 14-hour outage with their multi-factor authentication. So on one hand, more people are becoming dependent on the security stuff, but even some of those higher security levels that we're taking has its own headaches.
The big takeaway for me from these articles, the TechCrunch one about the leaky database of SMS text messages, that is bad. So if your app, or you're using an app that is still sending you a text message as a way of multi-factor authentication, you put in the code, that is actually no longer considered to be secure because it's too easy for hackers to intercept those text messages. Since, you know, text messages are a lot like email. They go through multiple servers and it's hard to know if somebody didn't intercept that. And they can spoof your phone number and get it. You know, they can steal your phone number, get the text message, log in as you. So that's no good. People really should be using stuff like Google Authenticator, LastPass Authenticator, those types of multi-factor where it's just a randomly generated code or an algorithmically generated code on your phone that you enter. You know, hopefully folks will switch over to that eventually, but you know, this whole everybody getting locked out of all their Microsoft accounts for what, 8 hours or something. That's just an unfortunate consequence of being secure. Sometimes your security gets the best of you.
And on that note,
but it's worth it. It's worth it.
And on that note, assuming I can log into Twitter this week, or you can log into Twitter, there's no security issues. How would somebody tweet with you and track you down?
My username is at Blake T. Oliver. And you, David?
At David Leary.
We look forward to hearing from you. We hope you enjoyed this Thanksgiving-sized podcast episode.
Ah, good perspective.
Yeah.
It's the Thanksgiving-sized episode. Way to go. But now I'm caught up. I'm all cut up. There's no more articles.
You are now. Do you feel a sense of satisfaction and completion now that you've digested all of your articles?
We'll see what happens this week in Cloud Academy.
Or are you like me going to start having regret about how much you ate?
Oh, I had that regret. I need to go run right now. So on that note, we'll go hit the gym.
All right. Enjoy your run.
Bye, Blake.